Hear this, you that trample on the needy, and bring to ruin the poor of the land, saying, when will the new moon be over so that we may sell grain, and the Sabbath so that we may offer wheat for sale? We will make the ephah small and the shekel great, and practice deceit with false balances, buying the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals, and selling the sweepings of the wheat. The Lord has sworn by the pride of Jacob, surely I will never forget any of their deeds. Shall not the land tremble on this account, and everyone mourn who lives in it, and all of it rise like the Nile, and be tossed about and sink again like the Nile of Egypt? That was Amos chapter 8, 4 through 8. The next reading is from the Quran, chapter 4, verse 135. O you who believe, stand firmly for justice, as witnesses to God, even against yourselves, or your parents, or your relatives. Whether one is rich or poor, God takes care of both. So do not follow your desires, lest you swerve. If you deviate or turn away, then God is aware of what you do. The next reading is Matthew chapter 25, verse 31 through 45. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep at his right hand and the goats at his left. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, come, you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you as a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you? And the king will answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. Then he will say to those on his left hand, you that are accursed, and depart from me into this eternal fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not welcome me. Naked, and you did not give me clothing. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they also will answer, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison, and did not take care of you? Then he will answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me.
Thank you. And thank you for that song, Mary. I love that song, and the funny thing is I almost chose it as one of our hymns today. So thank you so much for that. When John asked me to speak a few weeks ago, I saw the email just about the same time that I saw a Facebook post from the organization that my sister-in-law works for, the Southeast Immigrant Rights Network. Karen's sister has been a political activist for her whole career, mostly around immigration issues, and she's a dear member of the family. I really enjoy when I get to visit with her. And the post that I happened to see right about when John contacted me was about a protest that they were leading at an immigration detention facility somewhere in the Southeast. I don't remember exactly where, but it was right in the same time frame that all of us were subjected to the description of the conditions at the Florida Detention Center where Vice President Pence visited. And for me, and I think for a lot of us, it was just another in a long series of heart-wrenching and anger-inducing stories about human beings being treated like cattle and something subhuman or almost sub-living. And it was hard, and it was, you know, difficult to hear these things, and yet it's become so commonplace and so frequent now that you're just kind of anesthetized to it, aren't you? You're kind of numb to it. A couple of months ago, Karen's sister was visiting here in Portland because she was going to a retreat in Woodburn. And so she spent a couple of days with us before and a day or two after the retreat, just visiting and playing with the kids and stuff like that. But I was talking to her, and I talked to her before the retreat and said, you know, so what's this retreat all about? Woodburn is a community that you may know is a majority-minority community, and there's a lot of sort of immigration activism taking place there, some good organizations that are based there. And one of those organizations was hosting the retreat, and it was a retreat on strategies for avoiding burnout for people in this line of work. And so Karen's sister decided not to take her laptop because it was supposed to be a retreat and you're supposed to take a deep breath and you're supposed to really focus on the personal work that you were doing at this retreat. She just assumed, don't bring your laptop. But of course, right when they were having the retreat was right when the immigration raids were taking place in 11 different cities around the United States. And so in between, she was telling me afterwards, in between every break, everybody was rushing off to call back to wherever they came from to check on people and see how things were going because there were a series of immigration raids taking place. And so this retreat on avoiding burnout turned into maybe something a little bit different. And since my sister-in-law's organization is in the Southeast, obviously there have been some posts on Facebook since the big raid in Mississippi that took place a few days ago. Dozens of children left without parents coming home from school to find empty houses. An owner of a local gym is putting them up for the night because they didn't have any place to stay. And so many months after the family separation situation at the border was supposedly resolved and the media declared it resolved and moved on to other things, hundreds of new families have been separated at the border. And one official recently testified to Congress that there were fewer than 1,000 children who were separated, and he said it as if he thought that was good news. If you know me at all, you know I could go on and on and on about this topic and a million other topics, but the question that keeps coming back to me is, how did we get to this point? America, supposedly a Christian nation, and the evangelical Christians are some of the biggest cheerleaders for some of these policies. And my conclusion is, we need to get a new religion. And I think about what is the root of this religious problem. Some of you may, if you're a really long timer here at Southminster, you may remember the video series that we did. It's probably close to a decade ago now, called Living the Questions. A progressive Christian video series that kind of went through a lot of the topics of Christian theology and interpreted those from a progressive perspective. But one of the videos was entitled The Myth of Redemptive Violence. And of course, the point of the video was to argue against the concept of substitutionary atonement, which is the idea that God didn't have any choice but to either condemn all of us or put Jesus on the cross. And so there's this idea that God couldn't just forgive sin, whatever that is, but God had to do one or the other in order to take care of whatever problem this sin is causing. And of course, that idea is central to how a lot of people view Christianity, especially here in the United States. But when you really think about it, another way of saying the same thing is that God can only connect with people through violence. If you really boil that theology down, that's what it's saying, is God can only connect with people through violence. You may be surprised to learn that this concept that Jesus died as a sacrifice for human sin is not really found in Scripture. There are a few passages that people interpret that way, and the way words are translated kind of helps with that interpretation a little bit. But scholars largely agree that that's a misreading of the text. It was actually a bishop named Anselm, 1,000 years after Jesus, who sort of invented this theology. He lived in a medieval feudal society, and in his worldview, he couldn't understand why the Lord, and he was thinking in terms of Lord in a feudal sense, a medieval sense, he couldn't figure out how a Lord could be crucified. And so he put together this theology that Jesus' death wasn't actually the fault of the power establishment in Jerusalem, and it wasn't the fault of rank and file Jews who were calling for him to be crucified, but rather it was God's fault. God killed Jesus to redeem humankind. And then, you know, a few hundred years later, the reformers latched onto that theology, and the rest is history. But it's not really biblical. I would say to you this morning that violence is not redemptive. And the more that we live through this national reality show that we're all now a part of, whether we want to be or not, the more I think that this particular problem is pretty close to the root of what our issue is in our society today, that we as a culture think that violence is natural and normal and ordained by God because, after all, God did it. And so that's why in the U.S., the U.S. just has 4% of the population of the world but has 50% of the civilian-owned guns. That's why we have so many mass shootings. And yet just this week, after the horrible mass shootings last weekend, Walmart decided to keep selling guns, but to cut back on selling video games. Or at least cut back on promoting video games. To me, that is a real problem. So the reading we had today in Matthew 25 sort of has an apocalyptic feel to it. The sheep and the goats, and one group is being condemned and one group is being embraced. And yet I think what it's really a story about is legalism versus abundance. The ones that are marginalized by Jesus are the ones who failed to take care of the least of these. And Jesus says, as a result of that, you failed to take care of me. And they replied, we didn't know it was you. If we had known it was you, we would have taken care of you. We just thought it was some inconsequential person over there who needed our help and didn't deserve it. And so they had a checklist, right? And so their goal was to check all the check boxes on their checklist with the minimum effort possible, right? And the ones praised by Jesus did all these things because, not because they thought that was Jesus right there, but because it was the right thing to do. Not because they thought that was Jesus that was behind that chain link fence at the detention center, but because it was the right thing to do. And I want to read you something off of my phone. I wish I had gotten this in time to have it put on the up on the screen, but this was something that appeared on my Facebook feed, I think, yesterday. So now I have to find it. It's right here. I saved it right at the top, right in my photo. Oh, wait. Which way? There it is. See, it's right here. This is a protest sign that was held up at some protest somewhere. And it says, I was hungry, you cut my food stamps. I was thirsty, and you poured my water on the ground. I was a stranger, and you took my child and put me in a cage. And I needed clothing and shelter, and you told me to sleep on the floor. I was sick, and you denied me health care. I was in prison for the profit of your friends. Whatever you do to the least of my people, you do to me, Jesus. And I think that's what Jesus would have had on his sign if he were here today. I really, really think that what we need is a change of religion. And waiting around for other people to change their religion is probably not the way to get there, right? The agenda of peace should be waged aggressively. And the god of violence that so many people worship needs to be pushed into a far corner of society. And I honestly don't know how we do that. I think the millennial generation is as equipped as any to move us in that direction. They have a more holistic view of spirituality and diversity and peacemaking than the older generations do. And I really have a lot of hope in what might happen in the coming few decades because of how different they are in some key areas. I think the emancipation movement of the 19th century and the civil rights movement of the 1960s basically took this approach. And politics is part of it. But I think the change we need is more fundamental than politics. We need to transform into a people of peace. And I think we, and when I say we, I mean the society at large and those of us who are really sickened by some of the things that are going on right now, we're going to have to be very aggressive to accomplish that. And I'm actually pretty hopeful that the arc of history will bend toward justice despite the little glitch that we're in right now. Maybe I'm a silly optimist. But I think what we're living through now, and you know, maybe not everybody agrees with a lot of what I've said this morning, but I really think what we're living through now is such a cartoonish caricature of taking things to such an extreme that people are reacting against it. But the next political victory isn't going to fix this. It's going to require aggressive peace. If you're my Facebook friend, you know that a couple of months ago, our family went to Texas to visit almost all of our relatives, but the reason we went right when we went was because my nephew was having his bar mitzvah. And so I got to meet the rabbi that at the synagogue where they went, a Reform synagogue. Nice guy. I got to do a little reading at the service, which was nice. And then I just happened to be on the Huffington Post a few weeks later on my phone, and there was an article about a group of faith leaders in Austin, Texas, who had gathered to bless a new abortion clinic that was going in. And there was a picture there, and there was the rabbi that I had just met right there, standing in a circle with an interfaith group of faith leaders praying at this new place that was doing some innovative things to help women who are in these very difficult circumstances. And I thought, okay, that's a little bitty step, but it made the national news. And it was a step in the direction of peace. And it was a step in a lot of ways in the direction of aggressive peace. Of course, we need a million of those little steps, but I really think we're heading in that direction. It's going to require aggressive peace, and the God of violence is going to have to be marginalized. We're going to have to push that God out and bring in the God that we all know, who is a God of peace. Amen.